Full disclosure, when I read I was contacted by the Vice President of Marketing Communications and Sales Operations at Bureau Veritas Group, I assumed I'd be speaking to a 50-plus-year-old male with white hair. Instead, in today's episode, I was joined by a young, vibrant, very much brunette and delightful woman, Teresa Anderson. As far as career journeys goes, Teresa is still very much in the first half of hers and has already achieved so much. Not only does she share her journey, but also her very apparent passion for providing young women and girls with greater opportunities. We discuss her career journey and the many lessons she's learned along the way, including what it is that gives her that very clear devotion to what she does, the things that inspire her to get up in the morning, and women in STEM. As always, if you could rate, review, and hit subscribe, that would mean the world. Please enjoy Teresa Anderson. Hi, Teresa. Thanks so much for joining me.
Laura, thank you for having me. I'm super excited, so thank you.
Yeah, oh my God, we're honored to have you. I'm really excited. I'm really, really looking forward to this episode. I always do a little bit of stalking of all of my guests prior to the show. And so, yeah, I've been looking into your background and it's just so impressive. So could you tell us a little bit about your background and what it is that you do?
Absolutely. So I have always been interested in marketing and communications. One, because I love people. I love to talk. I like to share stories. So actually, since I was in university, this was something that I knew I wanted to pursue as a profession. So right out the gates, even in university level, I had marketing internships. That really fueled my passion. So I started off my marketing career in an international law firm, and then I've grown it since. Where I currently sit is as the Vice President of Marketing Communications and Sales Operations for the North America region of Bureau Veritas. Some of you guys out there may not know who Bureau Veritas is, so I'm going to use this to do a quick little BV commercial and educate our listeners to who BV is and the business that I market. So likely, you have touched BV in some way, shape, or form if you live on this planet. So if you've gone to a grocery store to go grocery shopping, if you rent an elevator to go to your apartment, or if you drive on a road, you've likely touched BV in some way, shape, or form. So we do everything from food testing to testing the oil that fuels your car to elevator inspections. You name it, if it needs to be tested, inspected, or certified, BV does it, and we're the leader in the world who has done it for almost 200 years at this point. And so it's something I'm truly passionate about, because I think how many marketers can say they are able to market something that truly makes a difference in the world? So I feel very honored to hold this role that I do, and I love telling our story. So that's a little bit about me and kind of what I do on a day-to-day basis.
God, that's so cool. And just to confirm, one of the emails that we spoke to arrange this, I was actually in the Pyrenees with my cousin and her boyfriend, both of whom are engineers in Spain. And they were talking about Bureau Veritas. And I was like, oh my God, we're actually interviewing the Vice President of Marketing. And they were like, shut up. Like, they just could not believe it. So yeah, they were really, you know, I had to do some research, but they were fully familiar with it. They were
people in the engineering world or like industry world, they know who we are because we're a B2B to us company, meaning business to society. Essentially, we work with other corporations, but the impact we have literally affects everyday consumer society around the world. So yeah, definitely if they're coming from an engineering background, I'm sure they've heard of us before.
Yeah, yeah. One of them electrical, the other one mechanical. So it wasn't even in the same fields. And they both were super into it. I was like, oh God, I'm going to have to really up my game.
I love that. I love that. What's funny is a lot of times we'll see our logo on just different things like trucks, cargo, stuff that's been inspected by us. And I always take a picture every time I see a BV logo because I'm like, here's BV out in the field. And I love seeing that.
Yeah. I mean, the company, it's essentially, actually, you explain it really well on your LinkedIn. You say that it shapes the world of trust because what it does is, so it regulates different industries. Essentially, it makes sure that anything whether it's a service or a product that's put out there by a business, is safe for people in society.
It is. It is. If you even look at our name, it's Bureau Veritas, which essentially translates into the Bureau of Truth. It is our job to ensure that whatever folks are using, they're getting in a car, if they're buying, let's say, a wedding band, I just got married, mm-hmm. we ensure that, say, that gold purity is what the label actually says it is, so people can actually trust that product and know it's safe. It's that extra assurance that consumers and just individuals need on a daily basis.
And it's a really interesting time to talk about this, because obviously we're still kind of going through a global pandemic. Do you think that there's a way that the pandemic has affected people's level of trust, whether it's in each other, whether it's in big business or even politics? I feel like now everyone's a little on edge, you know, you don't really know what to do or where to go.
Agreed. And I think that's why mental wellness is so important during this time. Just for me personally, and even my team, one of the things we've done to kind of cope with this pandemic is we check on each other, make sure everybody is okay. I think that helps cut the edge off of folks. Mm-hmm. The other thing that Bureau Veritas did in North America specifically, immediately when this pandemic was unfolding, because I don't think any of us expected that essentially it would kind of roll out as long as it had. But what we did was we brought on a medical advisor, somebody who can help us navigate this, because, you know, pandemics are, we touch a lot of things, but we had never touched a pandemic before. Yeah. And so we literally sought out a medical advisor who helped us navigate it, both for our internal employees and what we can do to really facilitate total well-being for our folks, mm-hmm. as well as we launched a program called Restart Your Business with Bureau Veritas, which really focused on helping other companies restart their business with safety and hygiene at the forefront. Mm-hmm. And what we were able to do is leverage our medical advisor and ask them questions like, what are some best practices, let's say, for a cruise ship that could help them restart their business and get people back on a ship? Or for a hotel, our hotel pool, gym, you name it. There are so many businesses that unfortunately had to shut their doors for at least a period of a couple of months during this pandemic, but they were eager to get back open, and mm-hmm. we were able to help folks do that. And I will say it was very gratifying to be able to be a part of that.
Wow, yeah, I can imagine. And I'm just curious, because it sounds like it must be such a huge level of responsibility, especially, I mean, if anyone looks up Teresa online, like if you look at the title, I would have assumed, like, you know, a 60 plus year old person with like white hair. And I was like, what? Like, this is someone like super young, just got married. Like, I was like, astounded. How would you describe your worth ethic?
So I will say, the title is a little bit intense, but you know what? I'm honored to have such a title. It is something that I worked very hard to achieve, and I'm passionate about what I do. So even though, yes, there's a lot of work, a lot involved with it, I'm passionate about it, and I have an amazing team I work with. So it makes it easy. And it's fun and it's enjoyable. But in terms of my worth ethic, I'm a big storyteller. I love a good story.
Go for it. We love stories here.
Sounds good. So I'm not sure if you saw in the news, but in North America, we recently announced a new CEO. His name is Sean Till. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, extraordinary gentleman. Has been with our business for about 4.5 years now. Just incredibly bright, smart, engaging. And I'm really excited to see what he's going to do with our business. But when it first was announced, I scheduled a call with him. And one of the things I did actually ask him, I was like, just out of curiosity, you know, what are the words you live by? And he said, there are two things I always live by. I do what I say I'm going to do. And no matter what, I always do the right thing. And it resonated with me, because that is essentially how I feel like I live my life. I want others to trust me. I think that is part of the way, or the reason why I've been able to accomplish a lot throughout my roughly 20-year career, is because I've been able to, one, allow folks to trust me, deliver upon what I say I'm going to do. I have this extraordinary team, but only way they're able to grow and be extraordinary is if they can depend on me as much as I can depend on them. That is part of the way I've kind of built the culture on my team. And also it's the way I position what I expect out of my team is, if you can trust me, I want to be able to trust you. That is the thing I push from every new employee that I hire is, are you trustworthy? Are you going to be able to do what you say you're going to do? And then on top of that, ethics, and especially in the business that I'm in right now with Bureau Veritas, ethics is probably the number one thing for us. So I need to know you're always going to do the right thing, and you have to have that humility in you. So in terms of what I live by, it's funny that Sean Till summed it up on one of my first conversations with him being an employee of his.
Wow. Honestly, it's making me want to apply. It's like, I want to work for these people.
I feel very blessed that I've had such an extraordinary team and I was able to build one. They're phenomenal. Phenomenal.
See, it's actually really interesting, again, to have this conversation now, because I keep hearing, you know, there's all this, the freelance community is increasing. Throughout the pandemic, a lot of people have either been let go from their jobs because some businesses simply haven't survived or couldn't keep as many people on. Some people have simply decided that this was their time and they've said, okay, this is an opportunity for me to go off and do my own thing. And part of the reason is one very work hard, play hard, unsustainable work culture where you're encouraged to just work, work, work a lot. It creates, I think, a lot of, I don't know, just from articles that I read, there's office politics is very salient, I think. There's a lot of self-promotion, let's say. Let's call it that way, because there's a lot of building your personal brand, whether it's because you start your own business as a freelancer or whether you're an employee. People look to build their own brand within the company so they can get ahead. And a lot of the time, I'm not saying not everyone by any means, but I do think that sometimes it perpetuates this culture of, are we all doing what we're here to do, or are we all more worried about getting ahead? Like, are we collaborating? To what extent are we sharing all the information? Because if you share an insight with your colleague, maybe that'll help them and you won't benefit as much.
I get where you're going out there. And I think this kind of goes back to my initial answer in terms of, you know, what do I feel like is important in a leader? And that element of truth and trust, right? So knowing that you can trust others and you can collaborate and innovate together. I think the other thing that as organizations, which you can do is to help foster that trust and that collaboration amongst teams. One of the things that has been very big to me has been kind of women empowerment and leadership roles. So as you can imagine, in an engineering firm, you typically don't see a lot of women. I will say in North America, that is a little bit different. Bureau Veritas as a whole, we have very ambitious goals in terms of how many women we want to see in leadership roles by the year 2025. And I'm pleased to say that in North America, we've actually already surpassed that. So that's amazing in and of itself. But the other thing what we've done is we created this women empowering women sort of group, where it's a support system for the women within our organization to just network with each other, go across business lines, business units, foster new ideas, collaborate. We also bring in various speakers from either other parts of our organization or external organizations of inspiring women to tell their story. I think it's important. I think there's a fine line between self-promotion and telling your story, because I think when you tell your story, other folks can learn from it. It can help you navigate future challenges that you may face, or even you have that empathy in terms of somebody else is dealing exactly with what you're dealing with right now. And perhaps you can collaborate on how to get past that hurdle together. So I think, you know, having that community sense is really important in terms of collaborating, but I look at it more not as self-promotion, but as that opportunity to tell your story and collaborate with others and share information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would agree, because also when it's more of a story, you know, you hear about, oftentimes with any story, you hear about the challenge and how that person overcame the challenge.
Exactly.
And so there's a learning opportunity for everyone. And there's also that sense of humility, to use the word that you used before, because I think humility is so important. I immediately trust someone more when I can see that they're A, humble, and B, introspective. Like, they recognize that, yes, these are my good qualities, mm-hmm. and it's fine to promote those, but at the same time, I recognize these are the weaknesses or challenges that I had to overcome. And I think that if everyone did more of that, that kind of collegiate introspection and sharing of stories, mm-hmm. as you said, I think it would just make life so much better for everyone. I've joined a group of women. It's like a members club. It's based in London, but it's global, and it's called The Stack. And it's exactly what you mentioned about women empowering women. And it's so great because I didn't think I was going to talk about this actually, but just quickly, because you reminded me, the founding entrepreneur, she's called Sharmadeen, God, I want to say Reed. And she was talking on Monday at an event about competition, about how we often see each other as competition and only to our detriment, because it means that we're essentially forcing ourselves to not learn from each other. You're always keeping everything to yourself. You don't want to ask too many questions in case somebody else asks you. And it's like, if you think with more of an open mentality of abundance instead of scarcity, you begin to realize that there's room for everyone to thrive.
Exactly.
Like, naturally, you've all got different strengths. No one's going to do anything exactly how you do it. You're never going to do something how someone else does it. And so just by being open and learning from each other, you can leverage each other's strengths to help each other.
And you can innovate even more. And that's why I also think diversity and inclusion is so important. You got multiple ideas. I always look at more ideas is better than just one. Multiple mm-hmm. experiences and viewpoints is better than just one. That is the way we drive innovation. And so when I see like anybody I'm working with, I encourage them to speak up. I want to hear what everybody has to say, because I think together we can develop something that we didn't even think was even possible or couldn't even vision it when we initially started out. But as mm-hmm. we build together, it's something bigger and greater than we could have ever hoped.
Actually, what you mentioned about diversity is really interesting, because I was going to ask you about, you also mentioned in your LinkedIn how mentorship opportunities have been really important and you're super committed. I mean, clearly you're a very passionate individual about, like, I can tell just from talking to you that you love what you do and it's a joy to watch. But also, you know, that you're very committed to helping other people who are, you know, more junior in their careers. And I spoke to Kalani Lafer a few weeks ago for an article that I'm writing. He's the founder and COO of a company called Co-op Careers, and they're trying to help people from minority groups and especially young people. A lot of minority groups, the issue is that they're the first generation within their family to go to university. And so whereas people like me, for example, who my parents went to university, I had that reference point of it was a very different time when they went, but still, I vaguely had more networking opportunities, arguably, with people who had gone to university, knew about the experience, knew what it's like to graduate from university, not have an idea what to do and try and find a role. Or, you know, there's just more opportunities for someone who comes from an environment.
And that's been the expectation, right? So like, yeah, traditionally, if that's the environment you've always grown up in, the thought was, hey, that's a formula. I mean, there was no, for me even, there was no other option other than to go to university after you finish like high school. That was a given. It was never something that I never thought twice about. It was like, okay, this is part two of what you're going to do next. And I think a lot of that has to do with, I had very strong role models in my parents, especially my mother. My mom was a systems engineer for IBM. Back when women were not really systems engineers. So, and she has a master's in mathematics, which I did not get that gene at all. But essentially, she was a very, very strong female role model for me. But one of the things I always saw her do is seek out mentors, because for her, she was first generation college student. But I saw her, how she navigated her career throughout her life. And there was two things. She always looked at looking for people, mentors to coach her through her career. But the other thing is she always brought up other people behind her. She was big in civic organizations and community and so forth. And so she always had her own mentees, and she still does. She's retired, everything. But in her spare time, she actually helps with the STEM program in San Antonio, Texas. Like, that is something she's truly passionate about. And she fostered that in me. And I think that's where I get that spirit from. But even beyond that, I've been lucky throughout my career. And I cannot say how thankful I am to have been exposed to some pretty phenomenal female leaders who were willing to mentor me. But I had to raise my hand. I will say that. I had to just say, hi, I think you're phenomenal. I admire you, and I want to learn from you. And I still do that. Even to this day with my new fancy title, I still feel like I am a mentee. I am learning. I'm actually, it's interesting. I'm learning both from people above me, but I'm also learning from my team members. They're teaching me things, and I'm open to it because I don't know everything. And I acknowledge that about myself. Mm-hmm. But in terms of mentoring, I think it's important to bring up that next generation to help them navigate. But I also think it's the role of the mentee to raise their hand and say, hey, I am looking for a mentor. Do you mind sponsoring me? Do you mind kind of going on this journey with me? So that's kind of where I fit in there.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's so interesting because I don't know why, but my impulse whenever I want to learn something is to ask someone who's done it. And that comes relatively natural to me. Like, I'm kind of like you. Like, I love talking to people. I have no qualms with praising people. I quite enjoy it. yeah, it's become a habit on this podcast because I'm always like, oh my gosh. I do have a lot of friends who think that reaching out to someone is the most petrifying thing they could possibly do. And I never really know how to help. I don't know. I guess the argument would be, well, leaders need to be mindful of who might need help. And I don't think we can really switch it that way. Because as you said, for example, someone like you, I would never have assumed that you would consider yourself a mentee. And I think that's pretty much always going to be the case, because I think that we always look ahead. Like, everyone naturally, our tendency is to look to our next move. Like, we always look up to the people that we want to be like or that we find impressive. And, you know, it's not necessarily that natural to kind of think, oh, who isn't at my level? Like, nobody really considers themselves finished, you know, like.
Agreed. We're all still a work in progress, right? That's why I love the actual name of your podcast, because I feel like you're always kind of in limbo and always evolving, right? And so I think even regardless of where you are, right, if you're a CEO of a company, you are still learning. I mean, the day you stop learning is the day I feel like you kind of check out. But to me, you always have to stay curious and stay learning and always know that you can always learn from somebody. I mean, whether it be one of your interns, whether it be somebody in a senior management position, you can always learn from anybody, but you have to be open to it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, for me, it took a while, I think, to not embrace it, but I mean, I definitely embrace it now. But when I was younger, so a few years before starting this podcast, let's say 5 years ago, it brought me a lot of anxiety because I kind of just assumed, you know, you go through your school years, you go through your high school years, you go to university, and everything's kind of a relatively linear path. I was like you in the sense that for me, both my parents went to university. There was never a question as to what was going to be the next step. It was like, you know, the options I had was to decide what I wanted to study, but it was never an option to not go, kind of thing. Like, it didn't even cross my mind. And so up until I was, say, 23 after my master's, everyone around me was relatively similar. Everyone's on a relatively similar time scale, doing similar things. You might be doing an internship and someone else might have a job, but they're relatively similar things to do. And then once you step out of that, everyone's life just, you know, someone moves abroad, someone gets married, someone has a baby, someone gets engaged, everyone starts doing all these completely different things. And that's when it's overwhelming if your mind is focused like mine was on comparing yourself to, not necessarily in a negative way, but I was kind of a little judgmental with myself. I felt like, oh, you know, I'm behind.
I think that is truly the worst thing we can do to ourselves is compare ourselves to other folks, just because their path, their journey is completely different than yours. And it's okay. It is absolutely okay with that. And I think we just have to get used, and especially in this kind of culture, and I'm a marketer, so I understand this, this culture where it's personas, right? You go on Instagram, you see somebody living their best life out in Monte Carlo or whatever, but you don't know necessarily how real it is, right? A lot of times things are smoke and mirrors, but if you're using that as a benchmark to determine, are you successful? Are you satisfied? Are you happy? Are you healthy? You're going to be disappointed, and you don't even know truly what's on the other end of that picture, if that persona that they're personifying is actually true. And so that's why I think you always got to, I know it's hard. I know it's hard, but taking that pause, taking that moment to just reflect on what you've done as a person and what you've accomplished and what you have to be grateful for and proud of. And just going from there, kind of isolating yourself from what you're trying to benchmark against, and take that moment and getting to know yourself and being thankful and grateful and reflecting on what you've actually done and accomplished.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for me, the breaking point as well was when I came to learn what you've just said through a book that was called It Didn't Start With You. Mm. And it's written, I want to say, by a neuroscientist or a psychiatrist who he talks about the fact that, you know, when men produce sperm throughout their lives, but women are born with the number of eggs in their ovaries. And so you come from an egg that was in your mother's ovary when your grandma was pregnant with your mother.
Exactly. How bizarre is that?
It is so trippy.
It is. I've thought about this. That's what's so funny about it. It's like, I've actually thought about, my mom was born with a fixed number of eggs. I'm born with a fixed number of eggs. And so I literally was in her womb the day she was born.
Exactly. And when you were an embryo in your mom's uterus, I was about to say stomach, that is not accurate biology. when you were an embryo, or I don't know, the size of a tomato, let's say, the eggs that you have in your ovaries now that will potentially one day birth a baby were inside your mother when you were it's just crazy.
It's, and like Russian nesting dolls is kind of what it reminds me of.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the best way to describe it. And it's just, it's weird, because I was like, well, that means that any chemicals that were going on in my grandma's body, any anxiety that she was feeling, any trauma that she experienced, joy, like just anything, that would have affected her hormones, which would have affected
your mom.
My mom into me. And I just think, that's what really made me realize that we are all starting from it. This isn't a race. Like, it's impossible. It's like trying to race athletes, but they're all starting at different points on the track. It's like we all, as soon as we're born, are completely different. This isn't like a level playing field in any way. There isn't anything to measure. And also, there also isn't a finish line that we're all going to arrive at. Like, everyone's got their own track. Like, completely, God, it's wild. It was that book. That book just changed it all for me.
I love it. Love it. I'm going to have to pick up a copy.
Yeah. Oh, I think, I want to say his name was David Wallin. His surname, I can send you the link. Don't worry.
Thank you. Yeah.
Don't worry. It's a great book. I read it in like 3 days.
Wow. That's a page turner.
Yeah. It was really, I mean, it's not necessarily a bedtime story. Like, it's one of those thinkers.
Yeah, and that's interesting and captures you, and it probably connects the dots.
Yeah, exactly. And back to what you were saying about mentorships and diversity, one of the things that I spoke to the founder of Co-op Careers about was also this thing about there's a lot of organizations have referrals. Mm-hmm. So when you work in an organization, you can refer people to join that organization, which is great. But also, leaders need to be aware of the fact that we have a tendency to gravitate towards people who are relatively similar than us or that move within similar circles. And so if certain people are using those referral systems, but other people aren't, say, for example, certain ethnic minorities don't have as many friends who, like them, went to university. Mm-hmm. So those friends aren't in a position to apply for that role. That person from a minority group then doesn't have necessarily as many options of people to refer to the company. And it kind of escalates from there.
Agreed. So here's what I will say, and this has also been kind of a passion project of mine. I was very fortunate that our last CEO, Natalia Schumann, who is also a mentor for me throughout my career, she gave me this moment to create a Bureau Veritas STEM scholarship. And what we did was we partnered with a couple of different organizations, the STEM Educational Institute and the Boys and Girls Club of America. The Boys and Girls Club of America, specifically in New York City, serviced kind of an underrepresented population. And so what we were able to do is kind of in two parts. One, teach the students and young adults about who Bureau Veritas is, giving them that level of exposure. Because to your point, first, it starts with people actually knowing who you are and exposing them to the company as well as the opportunities within the company. So we made that initial introduction with who BV is, making it very tangible for the students to understand how they interact with Bureau Veritas on a day-to-day basis. And then what we did was we created the scholarship program where we essentially chose roughly 15 students who were either in high school or their first year of university to become our scholars. And what that meant is they went through a week-long program where we taught them skills such as coding and analyzing data. We also touched on mental wellness as well as financial responsibility, really kind of looking holistically at our students and how we hope to see them grow and achieve as they go on through university and even going into their careers. But this was kind of our introductory program to be able to bring more minority populations and at-risk youth into Bureau Veritas. And hopefully, again, this is year one, we just launched this, but my end goal is to be able to develop a pipeline for these students into our organization to where they've learned about us at high school. Once they go through university, hopefully we can have a job for them on the other end. I put myself as well as our organization in that positions to where people know who we are. But what I also appreciate about our BV STEM scholars is they are taking the initiative to foster that relationship with myself as well as a couple of our partners like the STEM Educational Institute. And so hopefully we've impacted them. We're going to help them grow as time goes on.
See, and I think it's so important because I think education, particularly in STEM, it's actually something I've been thinking about recently because I just think it's so important. And some friends and I were talking about this the other day because there's an argument that, you know, how in some Scandinavian countries, particularly Sweden, for example, they started introducing young girls. They started opening the doors and making it more accessible for girls to go into STEM careers. And they found, this has only been tested on one generation so far, though, and they found that women still opted not to go into as many STEM careers to the same extent as guys. But there is this argument that this was, I believe Jordan Peterson was part of this discussion, and he was saying, you know, there's no point in these quotas because women will always choose to not opt as much for STEM careers. And the other person was arguing, you know, the other panelist, she was saying, you can't conclude that because this only started a few years ago. And the issue is socialization. So women might not be opting for as many STEM careers. That may be true. Apparently, the data confirms that. That being said, it's how we socialize girls and how the education system.
It's that exposure, that initial exposure at a young mm-hmm. age where you find things like science and mathematics really cool. Like I'll use mm-hmm. my mom as an example again. She always was passionate about numbers and math. And mm-hmm. like that was something that she, it was innate within her and it was her drive. And I think that's what always followed her throughout is she was very strong. She is very strong minded and she followed her passion. I think the other piece though, and this is what I'm really trying to do with our BB STEM scholars is giving them that socialization and also kind of dispelling what actually STEM is, right? So it was interesting when we first kind of went down this journey and we were talking to a few of the young adults and immediately when people think STEM careers, a lot of times they think kind of doctors, people in the medical profession, not understanding that STEM can be a lot of different things. It could literally be somebody engineering a building that's going to help people get from point A to point B for the next 300 years. It could be essentially a scientist in a laboratory testing for COVID or trying to find essentially a vaccination or something to prevent COVID. It could be somebody who's testing salmonella in food. I mean, the sky is the limit. What is important is to show, you know, just that vastness, that what STEM looks like is a million different things. And I think the more we can expose women, diverse populations to that, I think we're going to start to see more of an uptick because it will dispel preconceived notions of what STEM actually is. And I think it'll draw a little bit of excitement. I know it does with me. And when I think of everything that, you know, Bureau Veritas does and the different testing solutions that we offer, I mean, I even think of kind of how we've innovated throughout this pandemic. It never ceases to amaze me about what our teams actually do at BV. But we have this Canadian laboratory team that, of course, want to make a difference, want to make the world better throughout this pandemic. And so what they figured out was a way to test for COVID-19 in wastewater. And so communities can be on notice like, hey, we're seeing this in the wastewater. You might expect higher than normal levels here beforehand and almost look at it as a preventative measure. And so it's just, but seeing those kinds of stories in STEM than just kind of traditional treks, I think the more you get those stories out there, the more we're going to see an uptick in STEM careers for underrepresented populations.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And also, I've just thought of this as you were describing the range of mm-hmm. options in STEM, you know, because I think a lot of it as well has to do with the fact that there isn't a lot of transparency, understandably, but I think it's very hard for young people to understand what an organization could even look like. And so there's a lot of cross functionalities between different departments. So you could be apparently more sciencey or be within any of the STEM categories, but you could be collaborating from someone who isn't. Like this isn't just like a lab and white coats.
No, absolutely. I mean, I even think of me, a marketing professional. I do not have a traditional STEM background, but the services that I bring to market, I mean, they are all 100% pure STEM services. But I get to, one, foster that kind of mold or break the mold of what a STEM career actually looks like, but also use my natural given talents of creativity to help get the message out there as to what BV does and how we help communities around the world.
What would your advice be to someone who, for example, is looking proactively seek out a mentor but doesn't really know where to start? Because I think you're like me where it might have inherently come to you and that's just more natural. What would you say to people who aren't?
I would say start with your network or even folks you work with and admire, and do this: raise your hand, research them, just like you did with me in terms of did my virtual stalking. I'm all about the virtual stalking. Google them. Find out who they are. Find out what they're passionate about. Find out if there's truly somebody you can admire And one of the things that I will say, in this digital age, it has made folks more accessible than ever. You can probably touch them on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you name it. You likely can find that person and do initial outreach, or just shoot them an email if mm-hmm. they work within your work network. More times than not, people are flattered with the fact that you admire them and they are more prone to help you. I think a lot of times they just don't know. And I think if you can raise your hand and make that first introduction and just say, hey, I really admire what you're doing. Do you mind sponsoring me? Do you mind mentoring me as I navigate my career and kind of work with me on some challenges I may not know exist that you've been through? And I think more times than not, you're going to get a favorable response.
I think that's actually a very good point too. Making it clear from the message what it is that people are actually looking for. Because I've sometimes received messages on LinkedIn. Like you say, it's, you know, flattering. Of course, I'll jump on a call with someone. But sometimes it's not even clear that they're looking for a call. It's like, I don't know if you're just looking to connect. I don't know if, you know, so really making it clear what it is that you need, how they can help you. That's a key, I think.
I think so. So actually, I referenced a young lady who messaged me on LinkedIn yesterday, one of our BVSTEM scholars. She was very clear on what she wanted from me. She was asking me, do I know anybody in my network who is either in the performing art field or the medical career? And it's something she's interested in. And I said, let me look through my network, because I knew exactly what she was looking for. And so that's actually what I'm in the process of doing, is kind of going through my network to see who I might be able to put this young lady in touch with. But she was very clear as to what she wanted, so that way I could help her.
Yeah, exactly. Some of the time, I think people might be afraid to ask because they're afraid of rejection, I guess. And I think it's also understanding that sometimes you have to help people help you. Like, people don't necessarily know what you need. So yeah, I think that's great. And I was wondering, just because I was curious, moving off the mentorship, but just again iterating how impressive your career is, how do you manage, especially with such huge responsibility on your plate, being the head or, you know, a leader in one of these big, huge organizations, and then balancing your rest of your life, I guess? So how do you achieve that work-life balance?
So to be honest with you, I don't think there's ever truly balance, if you will say, in mm-hmm. terms of, at certain points in time, you give more in one area, and other points in time, you take more in another area. But what I think you do is you follow what you're passionate about at that time, right? So if you understand that a certain portion of your life needs a little bit more attention, you flex. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to kind of pivot and focus on that area that needs more attention. I think this concept of balance is almost a misconceived notion, right? Because I don't think anybody can ever strike a personal balance. But I think what you can do is, one, chase your dreams, figure out what you're passionate about, and then go after them 100%. I think when you do things that way, even though you might be spending a lot of time kind of in that work bucket, it doesn't necessarily feel like work, because this is something you truly enjoy and you're truly passionate about, and you're having fun doing it. Yes, it may be work, but it's still a lot of fun. So you're still getting that gratification out of it. And then at times you need to dedicate more time to your home life. I know for me this summer, that was it, as I was kind of planning this wedding in the midst of a pandemic. I knew I needed to spend a little bit more time just kind of figuring out what that looks like. How do I marry this amazing man in the midst of a pandemic so my family and friends can be a part of the ceremony? So I know at that time, you know, I need to focus my energy there. The other piece of it, I know I am only one person, and I know that with more people that I trust surrounding me, I can get even more accomplished. And I have that network. I have that team of folks, both personally and professionally, that also helped kind of ensure we all balance each other out in terms of, hey, one person has something that they need to do kind of in their personal lives, it's okay. Somebody else can help fill in and offset that load. So I think that's kind of maybe a roundabout answer, but that's how I essentially kind of stay sane and I'm able to accomplish everything I plan and want to accomplish.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. And I really like that because I think you're right. This terminology of work-life balance is thrown around a lot. And when you mentioned it, like, it's true. I was thinking, I mean, the majority of people work 5 days out of seven. How is that ever going to be a balance no matter what you do? So maybe you're right. Maybe it is more about, you know, finding the joy in the work part and trying to, it's more of a, make it more of a mix and combine it.
Exactly. And like, it's not always going to be 50-50 where you're giving 50-50 of this and 50-50 of that. It's not, but being fluid and being open to being fluid, I think, and being passionate about different areas of your life, it makes that journey and that process easier.
Well, again, congratulations. I've said it before, but I'll say it again. I'm really happy. Stay in touch. I'm really keen to know more.
Let's do it. Let's do it. And thank you again so much for working with my schedule and for your time. I really enjoyed this podcast. So thank you.
Oh my God, please. It's been an honor.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. We really hope you enjoyed the episode. As always, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. We love hearing from you. Bye!